ears on that. Wait for her ears to be on.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're fine. All right, if we're ready, we will get started. We'll open this workshop up at 9 a.m. For item number one, which is discussion and consideration regarding updating the rental contract and fees for county-owned buildings.
Okay. Did y'all have a chance to go over the 8,000 pieces of paper?
8,000 pages.
I'll be honest, I looked at it, but I didn't know.
Okay. Well, I want to start with the rate chart because I think that's the easiest. So basically what we want to do or what I want to do is change it from a, you know, this fee to a flat rate fee. So when they rent the ballroom, they, you know, the tables and chairs are included, the warming kitchen's included. All they would pay extra for is the audiovisual stuff, the stage lights, extra hours if they need extra hours, and the pipe and drape. So everything else would just be included in the flat rate. So the original rate chart had the ballroom and the conference rooms together on it. I've broken those out just to make it a little bit easier to read, I think. Does anybody have any thoughts? Did you have a chance to look at the rates? Basically what I did is make it to where it's not going to change much under this flat rate of what they would have paid if we charged them for the tables, the chairs, the everything. So it's really close. The commercial or the standard renters might pay a little bit more, but the nonprofits are basically going to pay what they were paying and maybe even a little less. So the rates didn't go up, they just changed.
More all-inclusive than a car.
Yeah, because it makes it difficult when we're doing the contract in the beginning. You know, they rent it a year in advance. They don't know how many tickets they're going to sell. They don't know all that. So when that's included in the original contract that I'm renting 432 chairs and 15 tables, that changes up until the last minute. So because they, so-and-so didn't RSVP or whatnot. So it just makes it difficult to manage, I guess. I'd rather just know, hey, however many tables and chairs you need, that's included in your rate. So if y'all don't have any questions about that, go ahead.
When they use the rooms for training and all that, we don't charge for that.
The conference room and the DuPont room, we do charge for that, depending on who it is. So, during the week, the Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 rates, if it's a nonprofit, we don't charge them. I mean, according to the chart, we can, but we don't. Because we're there. You know, we don't have to have staff. Now, if we have to staff it after hours, then we do have to charge. But during the week, during the day, now companies that come in and do some training, like Bay Towing comes and does some training, we charge them. It's a minimal fee. They don't complain. So
what is a minimal fee?
Let's see. So the conference room for the weekday, Monday through Friday, is the standard rate is $175 for the day.
So, and I think we need to talk about this, was the on during the day when we don't have to have extra staff there for the nonprofits, I think the language that we were talking about was that, just like you said we can charge them, but we don't.
Well, under the new policy or under this new rate chart, I went ahead and put the nonprofit weekday rate is free because
okay.
We don't
now,
charge them.
I want to be clear in that way because that way it doesn't look like we're trying to pick and choose which nonprofit.
No.
No problem. I have one phone call.
Okay.
No. I went ahead and changed that to just free.
I did.
Now the weeknights, the green section, if y'all have it there, is $100. So that's from 5 to 10. So if they wanted to do a 6 o'clock meeting, it's $100. For the nonprofit, standard rate is $175. So and then $200 for an all day. The only time really somebody uses the all day is in conjunction with the ballroom. So sometimes, like we'll have a woman's conference. Well, they may have breakout sessions in the conference room or DuPont room. So those are really the only time they use those. And sometimes for weddings, they'll use those both of those rooms for the bride's room and the groom's room. So pretty much no one else rents it all day, but I left it in there because it does get used in conjunction with.
I see all these, I guess, TxDOT or Highway Patrol, they have deals over here.
So TxDOT has their annual safety banquet. They just had it a couple weeks ago. They have been, in the past, charged a flat rate of $500. I don't know where that came from. That's just what they've always paid, and so that's what I charged them this time. we do want to streamline some of that so that, you know, if I'm Mack truck tomorrow, the next person comes in and they know what we're supposed to charge and what, not that we charge this person $700 and this person $500 or these people we charge for the warming kitchen, but this nonprofit we don't. I want to get away from all that. I just want a basic, flat rate that everybody understands, and there's no picking and choosing. Is that, you know, the special angels get this and the, you know, TxDOT gets this. If they're nonprofits and they're county, like, we don't charge county people for having, you know, things like that. So I just think that's, get away from the picking and choosing and stick with the flat.
You're in trouble now.
I like flat rate stuff. I think it makes it simpler. But my main thing was just making sure that we continue to take care of our nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. And they'll actually spend less.
I want us to make sure that our fees stay reasonable, mm-hmm. because it's already been paid for by the public. You know,
right.
So that was my main goal, my main concern. I think you get
it. I tried to go up a little bit, but the judge wasn't having it. Like a discount for them to use the facility? There's not anything right now.
Yeah.
We could charge them the nonprofit rate. I mean, that would be an easy fix. It's already considerably cheaper. So for county employees, we could charge charge them at the nonprofit rate.
Many of them that would want to use it. I mean, I've never had anybody say, y'all here more than I do.
No, I haven't, but I know that at the Gould, you know, there used to be a thing where retirees got it free or something. That was a big hullabaloo a while back that y'all changed.
Yeah.
So that's the only really, thing I've heard much about. I haven't had anybody ask.
The only thing I've had asked about is, like, employees that were involved with a nonprofit, specifically special angels. Tony Scholars asked one time about if he could get a special rate because he was involved with it. But I don't even know if it's far enough. It was for the special angels. That's all the time I've heard.
Yeah, I would think that.
But they already get that right.
Right.
Yeah,
and it's pretty considerably cheap, for the nonprofits.
Nonprofit rate for both nonprofits as well as any employee, county employee, that would want to use it for a birthday or a family.
Yeah. Okay.
That those two match.
For a retiree or just a county employee?
Ma'am?
Retiree or a county employee?
And then how do you confirm that? Especially if it's a retiree,
I would say county employees. I think you get into the weeds with retirees.
That would complicate the matter.
Current county employees get the nonprofit rate is, I think, reasonable.
I'm pretty sure we can identify retirees,
what do you think?
Oh, I like county employees, current county employees, even nonprofit.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
to clarify, the nonprofit during the day is free.
Right, for the conference room and the DuPont room, not the ballroom.
Right.
And, we're not there yet, but the next workshop is going to be parks, rules and regulations. With that, we don't have a nonprofit rate. We'll leave that.
Already, yeah.
I know, we'll leave that for another day.
Back to the employee, I don't want to kind of leave this thing, but how would you, there's another situation, like my daughter or my niece is going to have a wedding.
Right.
As long as you sign off on
it. If you're the contract holder, because somebody has to sign the contract, so I would think that the county employee would have to be the one contractually obligated to pay it.
Yeah, I think that would be all encompassing with the family. Mm-hmm. Whoever signing it, if you're an employee. Full time or any? Just part time.
Full time,
part time, anytime?
I would say full time. I don't, because we have a lot of part time there.
Well, you got permanent part-time, you got election part-time.
Let's put it as permanent part-time. I'm okay with permanent part-time because they're here all, they understand the program, but, our our seasonals and people who come to us, it's different all the time. That just continually changes.
And if it becomes an issue, there's so many issues with keeping up with it, you come back to us last night.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be. Like I said, I've not had anybody inquire in the 7-8 months I've been over there. So, yeah. So we are saying current county employees can rent any expo facility at the nonprofit rate, full-time, permanent, part-time. That's all right.
What's the hiccup about retirees as well?
Nothing. I mean, that's up to y'all.
Just the ability to be able to verify.
But it's the county definition of retiree. Because some people call themselves retirees, and it's the county definition of it is you take, when you leave the county, you take your TCDRS retirement, and you're on our health insurance. Some people call themselves a county retiree if they have gone on and they haven't taken their TCDRS and they're not on our insurance. You need to define what a county retiree, my definition of a county retiree is they're on our retiree list because they have our insurance and they've taken the TCDRS.
And what's that, 212 or something like that?
Right now, I haven't done a number and I hate to say this, but we've had a lot of people.
Yeah.
You don't have to say it, just ballpark.
And we have a lot of people about to retire. So I would say we average about 250, 275.
We say that the retirees that meet the county's definition of a retiree, and then that.
Well, I'm just thinking,
I don't have a problem with
them. Since I've been here, they've asked for raises, which obviously that's a whole other ballgame, but one way to do that. But this is a benefit that we can give to the retirees that really isn't costing them.
Doesn't hurt us, yeah.
I think Roy's definition of taking TCDRS because someone can work here a few years, go to another place and work 20, 30 years, but technically. I guess
I think really we're talking about a minuscule amount of people that are going to ask. I don't know that we need to.
Once he gets on retiring.
Well, that's true.
You just have to check with Lori.
So we're going to call it
retirees that meet the county's definition of a retiree. As approved by Lori Arden.
Only Lori when she retired.
You didn't like that language being in
there?
I mean, I saw Denise, you wrote it right there.
I did. It's already in the documents.
It's already there. Okay, so everybody's good with that. We're going to current full-time or permanent part-time county employees can rent the expo facility at the nonprofit rate, and retirees that meet the county definition of retiree. Also use it. Okay.
So, and I don't have to, and forgive me if I didn't read all this because, again, it was a whole lot of pages from the holidays that you sent out for us to read. Do we have anything yet for the pods in there? Because I know that's going to come up.
No, that'll be a separate, and we'll probably address that when we do the parks. We're going to do this whole thing again, like I said, for the parks documents.
And we'll put that
so
in the same.
We'll do that. Okay. Yeah. And I've already spoke to my.
We moved that.
I've already spoke to my parks girls about that as well. That's coming.
We have capacity issues with that, because we're going to have the number of chairs and stuff, and we're going to have to limit that to whatever that is.
Right. Okay.
Mainly due to parking.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's. We're all good with that. No more questions about the rate chart. We're going to move on to the other documents.
Okay.
So, there was two big documents that reference each other a lot, and sometimes those documents didn't jive together. So this document may say it this way, this one says it a little bit differently. So I wanted to get away from that where something references something else and have one document, a new rental agreement, that has everything that needs to be included in it. So Denise said that I'd asked her kind of how I go about that, and she said that we just have to either get rid of the guidance manual, the occupational guidance manual, in court. Since it was approved in court, it has to be done away with in court. And so I merged those documents together into one rental agreement. I provided you guys with the new proposed rental agreement and then with a copy of the both old versions The occupational guidance manual has markups on it that I kind of explained where those sections are going to be somewhere else. But the original contract was had so many changes, I couldn't even provide you with a list. So I just made a list of all the changes that were made.
Okay.
What number is that?
This is going to be proposed list of changes to OCCEC guidance manual and contract. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pages of, and it, like I said, it's just a list of all the changes that were made to either or document in the merging.
Proposed list of changes, item number 7.
Oh, item number 7. Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
So if you want, I can just kind of go through those.
Please.
And hit the highlights. So first, it was merging the documents together to make the terms and conditions of running the expo.
And so just, I'm sorry,
go ahead.
Let me stop a bit. I just want to make sure. Cause, so come in court, so we can't make any changes right now.
But right.
Come in court, we're basically going to vote to dissolve the occupational guidance. If we're going to change to this other stuff, we have to dissolve this one since it was approved in court to begin with.
Yes.
So we'll be on item number 8. We'll do that, and then we'll vote separately to adopt these different items separately. At that
if
point,
we like.
If we like,
right.
In the agenda, right? Normal court agenda.
Yes, however, I don't know that I would do them as separate agenda items because you don't want to dissolve one unless you're actually adopting the other.
Well, it's all in the same agenda item.
Oh, I got you.
It's one item.
One agenda item, but we'll do that. I just want to make sure that
the motion needs to read that they're doing all of
this
them, right?
One with the adoption of these new procedures. 6, 7. Okay.
That's how I would do it. Because, I mean, you can't pre-vote even if everybody thinks that it's going to go that direction. So you don't want a situation where you agree to dissolve it and then there's an issue and you don't have anything in its place. So I would do it all at once.
I got you. And at that point, we can say something along the lines of we're the motion is to dissolve this upon approval of these other items.
And replace with?
I would say and replace with.
Dissolve
and adopt. In lieu of, I mean, something.
I just want to make sure I'm thinking about this correctly as we're moving forward.
Yeah.
So we understand that we're getting rid of this one to take into these possible. Okay. All right.
Okay, so again, merging the documents to make them more concise. Most of the changes were just related to consistency. You know, it calls the expo 14 different things, the employees different things. So I just merged, fixed a lot of that, grammatical issues, spelling issues, etc. So, the mandatory event cancellation section is, I felt like we might need to do a little bit further, and Denise helped me with that. So currently it just said that if it requires canceling events, that we would refund their money. But I thought, well, we refund what they paid us, but we don't refund what they paid the cake decorator and the, you know, if they're, so I felt like that needed clarification. Denise agreed. So we have a section here that I just got yesterday or so. I wasn't able to provide it to you, but I'll read it. The primary purpose of the expo is serving as an emergency management command center for first responders in a catastrophic event. Should an evacuation order, declared disaster, or any other event or circumstance that requires the activation of the expo as an emergency operations center occur, scheduled events will be canceled. Additionally, events may be canceled due to other issues beyond our control. For example, power failure, storm damage, fire, flood, riots, etc. In either scenario, clients will be notified as soon as possible, and a full refund of sums paid to the expo will be issued and shall be the sole and exclusive remedy in the event of a cancellation under this provision. So that just kind of like spells it out.
Is that part of the contract when it's signed?
Yes, that's in the contract. And it was always in there, it just wasn't as clear as this. So that sounded good to you, Denise? Okay.
Have we ever anybody?
I don't know. Not that I'm aware of. We have?
Yes.
Can we have them initial that line to know that they've read that line?
It's the first, like, it's right at the beginning, and I've always, especially for weddings, I'm like, now you understand this is, you know. And it may not affect the whole county is what I tell them. Like, you know, it may not, like, other venues may not have to shut down, but this venue will. So just I make sure that they're very clear about that. But if y'all want to have them initial it, that's fine with me, too.
Especially during hurricane season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you want to add an initial to that section?
The emergency management center in my head.
Do you guys want them to have to initial that section?
Do we not get into, once we do that, is that not kind of, I mean, because once you say that in one area, then, I mean, the idea is that they read the full contract to begin with and sign it.
So under basic contract law, you're bound to it whether you read it or not. So the question of initialing is sort of a policy question. It doesn't make it any extra enforceable.
Well,
it's just a question of...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I get it.
I do like the idea of when you're going over the contract with them, kind of bringing that to their attention, because that is sort of out of the standard, but initialing doesn't make it any more or less enforceable.
Maybe a bolder print on that part of the contract.
Yeah, highlight or something.
Yeah. Okay. So the next change, number four, was change the date reservation deposit from 25% of the rental rate to a flat fee. It's just easier that way. Y'all have a problem with that? Okay. Change security deposit to damage / cleaning deposit, because security deposit, people think security, like I'm getting security. It's a damage cleaning deposit, so I think that's just clearer. Change the description of how refunds will be paid. It currently says in the manner it was received. That's not true. Everything comes from a county check, so we need to fix that. Clarify the cancellation policy. Currently, it only addresses what happens prior to 60 days and prior to 30 days. But not up until the event date. So I just kind of cleared that up there. All cancellation requests must be submitted in writing to the expo director. Cancellation 60 days or more before the event, a full refund of fees paid will be issued, with the exception of the non-refundable $250 date reservation deposit. And then cancellations less than 60 days before the event, no refund will be issued for fees paid, with the exception of the damage cleaning deposit, if applicable. Questions, comments? Y'all just stop me, because I'm going to go through them, because there's a bunch. Change the basic rental inclusion section to do the tables and chairs, which we talked about in the rate chart. Change the times restrictions and conditions section to further clarify the 13 hours of usage that was previously approved, and define how that time can be allocated, specifically noted in the second bullet point. Also added that the security requirements are enforced on these days as well. That's really for weddings. Like, they think they can come have a... rehearsal the night before. Well, they can't be drinking without security. So it just clarifies that if you're... So, we kind of... Sabrina, when she brought this 13 hours to court, kind of had a standard setup of access to the facility from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. for setup on a full-day rental. And then it closes from 1 to 4. And then they can come back at 4 for their event. So that's just kind of the standard. It's not required. They have 13 hours. They can kind of break it up however they want, but I just wanted to clarify that in there. If the 13-hour rental period must be divided into two separate days due to the event schedule, access to the facility is limited to 6 hours on the day prior to the event day, and the facility must be vacated by 7 p.m. on this day. Security requirements will be enforced during the entire rental period.
What is the reason?
One and four, the bullet points. Sabrina, when she had proposed it, she said that that's generally there's a dead time. So there's a person that we're paying, you know, part-time person to sit there from 1 to 4, and nobody's in the building. So she said that just kind of.
Oh, that's on a non-working day.
Right, on a weekend. Yeah, these are weekend type events.
So you have a set time and then the actual event.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's kind of why I ended it at, why I'm asking that y'all approve for it to end at 7 p.m. Because, like, let's say a Saturday event, they come the day before, they decorate for how many hours they have. If they want to stay till 10 o'clock that night, I mean, we're paying somebody, you know, all the day on Friday, all the day on Saturday. So I just feel like if they end by 7, that gives them time to do a rehearsal or to set up all during the day until 7. But it doesn't require staff to be there two nights, you know, back to back for the same event. So,
you think 7 o'clock is adequate time?
I do.
For rehearsal?
Yeah. I mean, they can come earlier. They don't have to, they can come, because they're not having food and things like that typically the night before. It's the wedding. So, you know, they come, they do the rehearsal, they go to dinner at 7. That's kind of generally how we do it at our event center. And I just feel like that's, like I said, less staff that has to be there till 10 o'clock when they're just standing around jibber-jabbering, you know. It gives them kind of a timeline to get done and get out. And like our nonprofits, usually they come in all day, depending on when the room was set up for their event. If they want to come in from 8 to 5, I let them come in and do their decorating. I just want them out by 7 so that I don't have to pay staff for the whole night. Questions, concerns? Okay. Number 10, change the move-in, move-out rate section to further clarify and limit the hours available. Again, that's just reiterating how that's going to be laid out. The floor plan section. So it's currently it says that we have a fire marshal come and approve every setup. We don't do that. We never have. I don't know if it's something we have to do. I think in the beginning, like when these documents were first created, they were expecting maybe a lot of exhibitions, you know, type shows where they would have tables everywhere, kind of like the gun show and coin show. Well, those are the only two we generally have. And I think that those setups were approved by the fire marshal initially. I don't really know. I don't know. I wanted y'all's thoughts on that.
I don't know how, because we don't have a fire marshal.
Right.
In the city, doesn't send theirs out there to the council. I don't know who would have done that other than potentially an ESD, and then we never would.
We also don't have a particular fire code that they're monitoring for adherence to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So there is a building capacity code,
mm-hmm.
right, that we follow.
Right. But as far as layout and that,
yeah,
that's, we don't have a fire marshal. We don't do that.
Right. So I just kind of wanted to either take that out or reword it. I'm not sure.
Well, I think that somewhere we need to have whatever that capacity is for that building,
mm-hmm.
depending on the levels, but we have to have that. I think we need that posted somewhere.
It's in the rate chart.
Okay.
So
it says that that's our deal. Mm-hmm. So that we're not opening ourselves, because somebody says, well, I have 800 people in here, something happens, and there's no place that says that we limit it to 450.
Right. And in the contract, it does state, let me find it real quick.
Because that's going to be real important when we do our pods down the road, because our pod capacity is going to be limited to the parking more than it is to the building.
So the very next section after this floor plan section is room capacity / occupancy. Room capacity is set by the fire marshal. It must be adhered to during the entire rental period. People will not be allowed inside any facility in excess of the established capacity. So that's already, that's always been in there. So I can just remove that section?
I think so.
Okay. When you have more than, 200? And so, well, we'll get to that. Let's,
I like that idea. I think we have to have security.
Okay, so we've already done that in the warming kitchen. Oh, you're right. We are right there. Okay, so, yes, it's always had the authority of the expo director to be more lenient with the rules. So, because sometimes we have to say we need more security for certain events, sometimes we can say less. So, like for example, with the Chevron GTP, they have 300 people at their luncheon. Well, we didn't require security for those. There's no alcohol, it's a luncheon, they're there for 2 hours, but we could require security. So I know we want to take away some of that grayness, but I feel like you almost have to have the ability to say some events are going to require a little more or a little less.
At the discretion of.
At the discretion of. And it's always said that. That's not a change. It's what it currently says, but that's, again, up to you.
You can't write rules that address every situation that comes up.
When you don't want to. I mean, it just, there are times when it just doesn't make sense to make a company pay an extra couple hundred dollars for security when it's a daytime work event where their jobs are on the line.
Right.
I mean, you don't need the SO for that.
They have their own security.
Yeah.
You can have a fight break out of church. If a fight's not
That's true. So, there were three or four different alcohol policies floating around, and it was in several different sections throughout several different documents. So that's why I kind of just merged them all together. Really, the only thing that's a significant change is that I would like to, I'm proposing that we do away with BYOB being allowed at the expo. We've had some pretty significant issues. So if you're having a wedding, you can buy all the alcohol you want, set it on a table, and have a TABC certified bartender serving it. You don't have to buy the alcohol from us or buy it from a company, but it must be served by a TABC certified server. Because when you have a free-for-all, like we've had at a wedding and a class reunion recently, it's a mess. We've had people throwing up in the trash cans. We've had people having to be carried out of the building because they're just guzzling bottles of liquor. We just can't have that. I don't think that's appropriate. And it's a liability for the county. So I feel like if we just say, you can buy your own alcohol for your event, you just have to have it served by certified bartenders. And all the nonprofits already do that. Like for the Purse Bingos, they buy all the wine and beer, but the people that are serving it are TABC certified. So.
Just like everybody does for the Bassmaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they go get their little certification, and but somebody's in charge of how much alcohol somebody gets. I mean, somebody's got to be able to cut them off. Anybody have a problem with that?
No, I'm fine.
Chris?
No.
Okay. Any other questions about that policy? No? Okay. Denise had an issue with the security.
I have a concern about the way that it's set up, in that we are requiring security, but we're telling them that they are privately responsible for the security, but we're dictating who they can use, how much they pay, and how they pay it. We're also requiring them to pay our employees in untraceable cash. So those are wages, and we're demanding that they be paid in cash. I'm not saying that we don't have the legal authority to do it, but it causes me concern because it's not a county function. They're county employees working in their private capacity, in the extra jobs capacity, but we're choosing who they get to use for their security. We're dictating how much they pay for it.
Yeah, I don't know that, I mean...
We're choosing the security?
That, as written, it says that it has to be an SO officer.
Yeah, I think
there are a lot of people who can serve as private security. Any peace officer, constables.
Yeah, when we do our events,
PDs.
We open it up to, we put a letter out to all the departments and say we need four people, you know, per night, or eight people, whatever it is, and whoever pulls in, and then they tell us their pay rate, and then that's what we pay. And I think you're right, because I was just looking at that rate that we got in here. Not going to cover any of the ones I've had to do in the last 4 years.
Well, that's what they charge. That's what, yeah, our SO guys charge to.
I don't have a problem with how much they charge, but that's between them and the client.
Right.
The county can't dictate it and say, you're going to pay their wages. We want to watch it, but we don't want to know about it. And some of them may have friends that can do it, and I also have...
So we don't allow that at our venue because, well, Uncle Joe, he's a cop. Well, Uncle Joe's going to be partaking at the wedding. He's not going to be watching whether or not somebody's had too much. So that's why I like that we give it to the SO to, you know,
also,
hand out to...
Do we have in there that it has to be a uniformed officer?
I don't know. It does not say that. It can.
Yeah, I think that way. I think it should be a uniformed officer.
Well, because that way their job's on the line, and if they mess up.
That kind of takes out Uncle Bob drinking at the party.
Right.
And also requiring that they pay in cash. A lot of these, especially if it's the bigger companies, they have to pay by check. They can't pay in cash. These are expenses that have to be documented.
Yeah, so I think we take the paid and cash part out.
Okay.
That,
and if an officer only wants to work for cash, that's between him and the client, but us dictating it, that's where I have problems.
Yeah,
so
I
think
the, we have to have a uniformed security officer based off the number of people
mm-hmm.
As required by the rules, and that's probably about it.
We can even cite the code, the occupations code section that authorized 1701, whatever that subsection is for second jobs or off-duty jobs.
So the way it was currently being done is, or the way the contract originally said, basically they contact the sheriff's office
mm-hmm.
and line up security. Well, at one of the weddings we had since I've been over there, they contracted security to be there from 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
The wedding started at 7, and they drank till midnight. We're like, no. So that's why we have more control.
If your security is not there, like if their security left at 8, well, I'm sorry, your contract is now
right.
ended.
Because they didn't leave, but they, you know, that's where I'm like, well, we can't have them just willy-nilly say, yeah, I've got security, and so that's why I wanted to have the form that they sign,
yeah.
and they say security's going to be here 30 minutes before, and they're going to stay
the
last ones out in
the building.
That's a separate signature that they sign saying they know this is how many security officers they have to have,
yeah.
kind of lining it out, and then for me to give that to Brooke. But if that's getting us too involved, we can do it another way. I just don't,
I
don't want
to. I think we have to do that because we're protecting ourselves.
What about number one, constables?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, other police officers from, like, somebody rented it from Bridge City, and they want to use Bridge City constables.
Yeah, we do allow that. That's not an issue. It may not, so we should change that wording, that it has to be a sheriff's office.
Yeah.
How about it's coordinated by the sheriff's office? That the sheriff's office.
Well, that's kind of what it says.
Other officers.
That's kind of what it says, I think. Let me get to it.
But the sheriff, I mean, yeah, they're going to keep it in-house.
OCSD requiring officers are not available, other local law enforcement agencies will be used. So it's just kind of we give the SO first option.
Well, but again, that's us setting up security, but then telling them to pay on the side.
Right.
That's the problem. If we want to set up security and it's our security, then the whole thing goes through us. We tack it on to whatever we're charging, and we pay, and then it goes in as regular wages because we're using officers on official time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's scheduling up their side jobs, and we're dictating everything and just paying under the table, and
yeah.
I'm not comfortable with
yeah.
that.
Okay. So how do we avoid it? What do we?
I think it makes the most sense to tell them that they're responsible for security. You have a page that they have to fill out where they tell you who they have contracted with, and they give it to you. You can call the agency and verify, because it's going to have to be somebody that's carrying a current commission.
Right.
So you can call and verify, but you've got the paper, and they take care of everything else themselves.
So I'm going to call it.
If we have that in there, that they have to be a uniformed
commission,
that will take care of a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, because once you leave, you don't get rid of it, unless you take your uniform with you. It's out. So.
Well, I think if we say uniformed and commissioned, that. That's right. I mean,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you have a separate page that is a security addendum where they fill out exactly who they've contracted with, and they're required to provide that to you, and you can either verify it or rely on it.
If she's got to do all that, why don't we just have? Why don't we just include?
Why don't we just include security? I think we're include security cops. And then
they got to pay us.
Well, it also limits, so
which we have a lot of.
We're short-handed on officers frequently.
Yeah,
so now you're talking about paying officers overtime.
And some of them won't want to do it because they like the cash jobs.
I heard a security event. It's almost like there was a rotation of different agencies involved and everything else. We don't.
I think it's working fine right now. We just have to limit. We have to verify.
I think we just take the cash part of it out.
Okay.
They have to be a uniformed commissioned officer
mm-hmm.
based off the number of people.
So I'm just going to take out that last sentence. The pay rate for one security officer is $50 per hour and should
yeah.
be paid. Taking that out.
Yeah.
And then I put the sheriff's office. So if somebody doesn't have any connections to any law enforcement, then you can connect them to the sheriff's office to arrange it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that can be, not must
yeah,
be.
If they say, hey, I don't really know any of these people, you can say, well, I can get somebody. You can contact at the sheriff's office if you want, But let that be their question, not mm-hmm. yours. And then you give them a number, give them Brooke's number, let them call and do it. I mean, we've done that before on other events.
Right. I mean, that's kind of how it was handled in the past.
That way,
I just didn't like not being in control of how many hours, because, like I said, they go, I only need security here for a couple hours.
Well, that's why I said a separate security addendum where they're verifying how many hours, and then you can check with law enforcement and say, okay, how long are you planning to be here? That way you can make sure the hours are covered if you have concerns.
Yeah.
If we do that, can we also have, if another, like Bridge City Police Department wants to be on that list or, you know, that's given out, can we have that as well?
A lot of places will give you a list of local agencies whose officers do side jobs. So it lists the sheriff's office and the contact person, Bridge City PD and the contact person, constable.
Yeah, maybe we can get that from, you know, just a list that you can say, here's people that you can contact, you know, the different agency departments.
But they have to then turn in a form to me saying who they contacted and they contracted to do it.
Right.
So this last little bullet point, Expo clients are responsible at their sole expense for employing as many security officers as required by the Expo director, period. Mm-hmm. Take off the and Orange County Sheriff's.
Yep.
Director will provide a completed form. So take off as required by the Expo director. And take that out.
So when they book with you, they tell you the time period that, and how many people are expected. Mm-hmm. So my thought is when you're taking the reservation and you're going through the contract, you can identify it's this many people with or without alcohol, this many hours. So you can fill out the top part of the security addendum so that they know exactly what it is they need based on your rules.
Right, right. Well, I was going to keep it kind of the same. I have a copy of the... security. So the I don't know what number it is on y'all's thing, but the event security at the Orange County Expo form. So
it's under item 9 here.
9, okay. So let's see. Once approved by Expo director, the information herein may not change within 14 days of the event. Any requests to changes require written approval from the Expo director. So. So I just need to add a section here. Basically for them to fill out who they contracted, right? I mean, do you have a copy of this form?
I'm sorry,
I don't have. So this is the form that I was going to fill out and have them sign, and then I could email it to Brooke. But I just need a different section where it says who they contracted.
Yeah, you're going to fill this out so that they know exactly how many,
They tell me who they did. Okay, yeah. And their contact information. So I can just add that here at the bottom, that they will... give me the contact information and the name of the officer or officers that they've contracted.
They got the number of Orange County
Right. Right. Just number of security officers required.
Right below it, you maybe have a list of names. I don't think you can list names or list where they're from.
I'll need their names because I'll need to contact them all directly because, like I said, sometimes they don't realize, you know, oh, well, the wedding ends at 10. We're going to take 2 hours to clean up. Well, the security's going to stay there. They're the last ones out of the building.
Yeah.
Because cleanup turns into, you know,
extended
partying. So, you know, we can't, and they're already drunk.
Never happens to clean up at my place.
No, never.
Everybody leaves and I'm stuck.
Shenanigans when it's your
beat. Yeah. That's when the fun begins.
I'm going to take out that there is a 4-hour minimum because that's not up to us.
Yep.
Security shall arrive 30 minutes before alcohol is served and stay until the premises have been vacated. All events with alcohol present at the expo require security, period, not to be scheduled through the... alcohol may not be served or consumed until all security is present. Security shall arrive 30 minutes before alcohol serves day. Following formula may be used to estimate the number of officers required to be present at an event with or without alcohol. The requirement may be waived or increased depending on the event security needs at the sole discretion of the expo director. Are we good with that staying in there? And then those are just the take out OCSD. Okay, I can update that with those changes, and that should be fine. Any other thoughts, complaints, questions about that? OCSD. Mm-hmm. All right.
You got 13 minutes.
Okay, uniform commission. Objectional activities and persons. Denise had a issue with that. I didn't write
that.
That's
so terrible when you say it that way.
No, but, so that was, nothing changed in that except that I added, I mean, from what was already approved. I just added that we have the ability, if the officers think we need to shut it down, or my staff or myself think it needs to be shut down, that we can. That wasn't explicitly said in the original contract, and we pretty much had to do that at a class reunion a couple weeks ago. So,
the
but she
only,
doesn't like that term.
Well, the only concern I have is the term objectionable behavior, because disruptive is an objective thing. Dangerous, those are all objective things. But in this current political climate, what one person deems objectionable,
so
we don't want to get, especially since we have First Amendment issues, because we are acting as a government agency. So I just don't like the phrase objectionable, because it's so subjective. And as long as it's not being exercised in an improper way, but obviously we don't want anybody shut down for viewpoint discrimination or anything that's going to blow back on us. I just, seeing the word objectionable behavior just, I don't know, put
so
my hair up.
What word can we use instead?
Yeah, a word that you feel better with.
I like disruptive.
Okay.
I think disruptive or dangerous. Disruptive
situation.
Or dangerous. Because that really should be the threshold.
Or dangerous situation. Because people get into fights and all of that kind of goes to a whole different deal. Tearing up some equipment.
Getting struck, you're standing in a trash can throwing up.
Right.
But is that disruptive and dangerous?
I would say that's dangerous.
Dangerous?
Well, because if you're throwing up in a trash can, you're into alcohol poisoning territory.
Right.
So.
Okay. Okay, so I'll just change that. In that section, it says any person whose conduct is objectionable, disorderly, or disruptive. We're going to take out objectionable, replace it with dangerous, but we're going to keep disorderly and disruptive, right? And add dangerous.
Yes.
All right. And we're cool with us being able to shut down an event with no refund. Denise said that we should add that same verbiage about the refund to they won't get a refund. So I'll add that to the last sentence of that. Okay, insurance requirements. Denise and I have talked about that a little bit. Right now it just says most events are required to have insurance. I need more clear, again, back to Chevron's luncheon. Are they, do we require them to have $1 million policy to have lunch at the expo with 300 people? Do we base it on what type of event it is, how many people are at the event, if there's alcohol at the event.
Yeah, and your weddings and showers, most of that's not going to carry insurance.
No, they do. The weddings for sure do. That's weddings we would always, class reunions, anything.
So I think the distinction here, when you think of insurance, and I think it even says in there a general liability policy,
right.
And most people don't carry $1 million general liability policies, but they actually sell event policies, and it's like $50 to $200. It's actually a fairly reasonable thing, and I think that is more reasonable than a $1 million general liability policy, because most people just don't carry that.
You can have special events. You list they have to have some type of special event coverage. That's what we have to do. We use special event coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
have someone, would that be there?
No, they go out and they have to provide us with a certificate. So and they that's not been an issue. As far as them getting it, it's a matter of it's not, the issue is that the contract says most events. Well, which events are we specifically, all events?
I would think we would say all.
It's got to be all or none.
Well,
GTP's got to go out and get an event insurance policy for election. I mean, it just seems overkill.
But they're probably self-insured for stuff like that.
And so I kind of talked to Denise that, our event types kind of are broken down into commercial, which is companies that rent for luncheons, banquets, things like that, Christmas parties, nonprofits, usually renting for meetings or fundraisers, or individuals, weddings, class reunions, things like that. Individuals is a no-brainer. They all need a policy, and they know they have to get it. It's not a big deal. I get into the weeds with the commercial and the nonprofits. I think if there's alcohol present, it should be required. I don't think that luncheons and meetings were, you know, trainings. They're there for training. I just don't think you need a policy for.
Insurance company anyway,
right.
Well, they got enough to pay. I mean, you have to look at their ability to pay if they do need it.
And that's why with individuals, you know, you don't know. So that's a no-brainer, but I don't know.
Special event coverage.
Like weddings and liability?
They do. They have to have they call it a general liability, which is what some of the certificates have said. So I don't know how to word it, however y'all want me to word it. But
I think at the discretion of, because each one's going to be different. Trying to figure out a way to word it where it covers everything is almost impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we say that there will be some kind of event insurance at the discretion.
Required at the discretion of the expo director.
Well, and I think up to this point it's been a discretionary mm-hmm. matter, and as long as there hasn't been a problem or a complaint, I 100% understand keeping things black and white because it simplifies, but something like this, it is almost a case-by-case. If there hasn't been a problem, then I think discretion is probably the better way to go.
Okay, so I'm going to leave that as it was stated previously and add at the discretion, because it says most, without anything else, at the discretion of the expo director.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
And if you want to put in order to, for people to understand, you can put at the discretion of the director depending on size and nature of event.
Okay.
That way they at least know what you're considering.
Yeah, you can say, you can tell somebody that's wanting to do a wedding that you're requiring them to have it, but you're not requiring CBKM to have it. Well, because CBKM's corporation, they have coverage insurance already.
Right.
An individual's not going to have it.
You said depending on size and what?
Nature.
Nature. Okay. All right, I'll add that. The animal addendum, did you see my note about, can I just reference the section?
Yeah, as long as it's somewhere in there says that you're going to abide by ADA,
yes.
Then I'm okay with
okay, that. Okay, I'll add that. So did y'all read over that animal? Y'all have any questions about that?
Can we put in there that our security officer at the visual of a snake in an event cannot leave the premises? Because our security officer left when the snake showed up. And they were out of the building. I am not kidding. They left.
Okay, so we're almost there. Discuss the inspection and permit section. I think we've already discussed that with the floor plans. I'm just going to take that out. Change, oh, it's like stage floor. There's a section that discusses the stage. At the class reunion, we had about 75 people bouncing up and down on the stage. So I've added that we can only have 10 people on the stage at a time. That way, if security needs to say, get off the stage, there's something that says only so many people can be on the stage.
Do we have video of this class reunion?
Yes, I can show you. Amend the smoking restrictions section to include vaping. We've had a lot of issues with them vaping, marijuana, everything in the expo.
You've got to be kidding.
No. Number 23 is real exciting because at the class reunion, I learned lots of new rules at that class reunion. They had the lights all the way off, so security could not see anything. And the video didn't show as clearly. So we have the ability to restrict them to only dimming the lights to half. So that if I need to say, we can't see, it's a safety issue, I can make them turn the lights up to half dimmer.
Is there a provision in here that says that we can we reserve the right to rent this to that classroom?
I tried that, but I took out the BYOB. I think that's going to take care of it. BYOB will solve a lot of the issues.
And when is their next reunion?
I've got to call them next week to schedule. Can't wait. But I think the BYOB is going to fix a lot of that and give our security and our staff the ability to kick people out if they're breaking the rule. Right now, there's no rule against it. So, okay, real quick. The hold harmless, the caterer waiver, and the vendor waiver. Basically the same document. One's just specifically for caterers. It adds a little bit more verbiage. The vendor is just for all vendors, photographers, people that rent the photo booths, whatever. Did y'all have any issues about that? Did you read over that? Everything's good? Okay. Yes, yes, I will.
All right.
But we're going to, on the agenda, we're going to say approve this per our changes that we discussed here.
Your per pending changes approved by Denise.
Yeah, okay.
Dissolve in place.
Dissolve too.
All right, yeah. Everybody good?
Thank y'all so much. I know that was a lot.
So I have questions. We are going to adjourn at 9:56.